All right, so you're here because, let's face it, law school is a marathon, right? You need knowledge and you need it fast.
It's true. Efficiency is key.
Absolutely. And that's what we're all about here on the Deep Dive, giving you those crucial corporate law insights without the fluff. Today, we're tackling a case that's a real cornerstone, Bayer v. Baran, 1944.
A classic. And still so relevant today.
Exactly. It's all about understanding the limits of what company directors can get away with, especially when those fiduciary duties and the business judgment rule come into play.
Those are the biggies, yeah.
So let's break down this case. What were the main issues that landed Celanese in hot water?
Well, there were two main controversies that sparked this whole legal battle. One was a pretty big investment Celanese made in a radio advertising campaign, and the other revolved around an employment contract with the vice president of the company.
Okay, so let's start with that radio campaign. What was the story there? I know Celanese launched this pretty massive campaign back in 1942, spending something like $1 million a year.
Yeah, $1 million back then was serious money.
No kidding.
Yeah.
And I understand this campaign was partly driven by those new FTC labeling requirements for rayon, right?
That's right. They needed to educate the public about what rayon actually was.
But there's a twist, isn't there? Because one of the singers they featured quite a bit on this program was Jean Tennyson.
Yeah, and you know who she was married to?
Camille Dreyfus, Celanese's president. That definitely raises some eyebrows, right?
Big time. That's exactly what caught the attention of the shareholders. They filed a lawsuit alleging that the real purpose of this whole expensive radio campaign wasn't just about the rayon labeling. They claimed that the whole thing was basically a scheme by the directors, including Mr. Baran, to try and launch Gene Tennyson's singing career.
Whoa. So they're saying the directors were putting their personal interests, or in this case, maybe the interests of their family members, ahead of the company's best interests.
Exactly. And that's a huge no-no in corporate law.
Definitely a breach of their duty of loyalty to the company.
You got it.
So we've got this radio campaign controversy, and then on top of that, there's also this issue with the employment contract involving Henri Dreyfus, another member of that Dreyfus
Yeah.
family, right?
Yeah. Henri was Camille's brother and the company's vice president. Oh, and he was also a director of the company. Back in 1933, Celanese had entered into this employment agreement that paid out $30,000 annually.
$30,000 in 1933. That's a pretty sweet deal.
Yeah, not bad at all. And this money was to be split between Camille and Henri. Now, the interesting part is that this 1933 contract was essentially an update to an older agreement they had from 1918.
Okay, so we have these two agreements spanning over a decade. What was it about the 1933 contract that the shareholders had a problem with?
Well, their argument was that those payments to Henri under the 1933 contract were basically unjustified. They claimed that he was already obligated to do the work he was being paid for under that original 1918 agreement. You see, that earlier agreement was all about the Dreyfus brothers selling their chemical processes to Celanese and taking on those managing director roles.
So the shareholders are essentially saying, hey, this guy's getting paid twice for the same work.
Exactly. They felt like Henri was double dipping and they weren't happy about it.
So we've got these two pretty specific situations, one involving the radio campaign featuring the president's wife, and the other involving this potentially overlapping employment contract. So what were the big legal questions that the court had to grapple with in this case?
Well, if you zoom out a bit, the court was really wrestling with two fundamental questions about the responsibilities of those Celanese directors. The first one was all about that radio campaign. Did the directors, by greenlighting this big budget campaign that featured the president's wife, cross the line? Did they prioritize a personal benefit over their duty of loyalty to Celanese?
Yeah, because the suspicion was that maybe their main motivation wasn't really a sound business strategy, but rather something a little more, well, let's say self-serving.
Exactly. Were they just trying to do a favor for the president's wife and boost her singing career? That's the question the court had to figure out.
Right. And then what about the second big legal question the court had to tackle?
The second question focused on that 1933 employment contract with Henri Dreyfus. Were those payments to him a legitimate use of company money for new services? Or were they a breach of fiduciary duty? Basically, were they compensating him for work he was already supposed to be doing under that old agreement?
Okay, so to really understand how the court arrived at their decisions in this case, we need to talk about the guiding principles, the legal framework that comes into play here.
Absolutely. And in corporate law, two key concepts are absolutely essential here: the business judgment rule and the duty of loyalty.
Let's start with the business judgment rule. What's the gist of that?
The business judgment rule is like a shield for corporate directors.
Mm-hmm.
It basically says that courts are going to give a lot of deference to the decisions made by a company's board of directors.
So judges aren't going to second guess every business decision the board makes.
Right. As long as those decisions were made in good faith, without any shady dealings, and with a reasonable amount of care. The idea is that judges aren't business experts, so they shouldn't be micromanaging the company.
Makes sense. So the business judgment rule is kind of like saying, hey, directors, we trust you to run the company without us breathing down your necks.
Exactly. It gives them the freedom to make decisions without constantly worrying about getting sued over every little thing.
But there are limits, right? That's where the duty of loyalty comes in.
Exactly. The duty of loyalty acts as a check on that freedom. It means that directors always have to act in a way that they genuinely believe is best for the corporation and its shareholders.
So no putting their own personal interests ahead of the company's well-being.
Precisely. And they have to avoid any situations where there's even a hint of a conflict between their personal interests and their duties to the company. Think of it this way. The business judgment rule lets directors act, but the duty of loyalty is like a big red stop sign. If a director violates that duty of loyalty, they lose that protection of the business judgment rule.
Gotcha. So it's a balance, right? Directors have the freedom to make decisions, but they always have to keep the company's best interests in mind.
Exactly. They can't use their position for personal gain.
Okay, so with those principles in mind, let's go back to Beyer Wiesbrand and how the court applied them to that radio campaign.
So the court really had to dissect that potential conflict of interest, right? The big question was this whole radio campaign just a way to promote the president's wife?
And what did they decide?
Ultimately, the court decided to uphold the radio campaign. They emphasized that there was a legitimate business reason for it. Celanese had done their homework, they'd done advertising studies, gotten advice from experts, and all of that suggested that this wasn't just some random favor for Jean Tennyson.
So they weren't just throwing money around to make the president's wife happy.
No, they had a documented business purpose, which is important. And the court also pointed out that there was no real proof that Jean Tennyson got any special treatment. Sure, she was a featured singer, but she wasn't the star of the show. She wasn't getting more airtime or anything like that.
So she was just one of the performers.
Right. And this is a crucial point because it highlights that just because someone who's connected to the company might incidentally benefit from a business decision, that doesn't automatically mean the directors are breaking the rules. The court's really focused on the primary motive behind the decision.
So the distinction is between an incidental benefit and the primary motive.
Exactly. The court's basically saying, look, if a business decision is made for a legitimate corporate purpose, and it just so happens that a director's wife or husband or kid gets something out of it too, well, that's not necessarily a problem. We're not going to automatically assume wrongdoing.
Mm.
But if that personal benefit was the main reason for the decision, then we've got an issue.
So it's about what the driving force behind the decision was. Was it genuinely about helping the company, or was it about personal gain?
Right on. And there's one more piece of the puzzle here that helped convince the court that the directors were acting in good faith. Remember that the board renewed the contract for this advertising campaign after it had been running for a while.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They didn't just approve it once and then forget about it.
Exactly. And to the court, that showed that the board was paying attention, that they were monitoring the campaign, and that they believed it was actually serving a legitimate business purpose. If it was all just about Jean Tennyson, they probably wouldn't have bothered renewing it, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. So the court decided that the radio campaign was okay. They felt it was protected under that business judgment rule. So what about that employment contract with Henri Dreyfus? What did the court have to say about that?
Well, in that case, the court also ended up siding with the directors. Their focus was on how Henri Dreyfus's role had evolved within the company. They really dug into the details of that 1918 agreement, the old one, and compared it with what the 1933 contract said. And what they concluded was that the newer agreement wasn't just a carbon copy of the old one.
So it wasn't like they were just paying for the same old, same old.
No, the court felt like the 1933 contract reflected new responsibilities that Henri had taken on, and it also covered potential new inventions he might come up with. All of this went beyond what that original 1918 agreement was about, which was mostly focused on the Dreyfus brothers selling those chemical processes to Celanese and their roles as managing directors.
So even though there were these two contracts, the court was convinced that Henri was actually bringing something new to the table under that later agreement.
Exactly. They felt like there was a legitimate basis for that new contract and those payments. They weren't just paying him for doing the same things he was already supposed to be doing. They were compensating him for the additional value he was bringing to the company.
And I'm guessing like with the radio campaign, the court also put a lot of weight on the director's good faith in making this decision.
Oh, absolutely. Just like with the radio campaign, the court was looking for any signs that the directors were acting in bad faith, that they were trying to pull a fast one and line Henri Dreyfus's pockets without a good reason. But they didn't find any evidence of that. They were convinced that the directors made this decision because they genuinely believed it was in the best interests of the company.
Okay, so we've walked through all the twists and turns of Bayer v. Baran. We've seen the facts of the case, we've looked at the court's reasoning, but now let's bring it back to you, our listener. Why is this case so important for you as you're going through law school?
Well, Bayer v. Baran is a real classic for a reason. It's a foundational case because it gives us such a clear picture of how courts try to strike a balance. On one hand, you've got the business judgment rule, which gives corporate directors a lot of freedom to make decisions. But on the other hand, you've got that all-important duty of loyalty.
So the court has to weigh those two things, right?
Exactly. They have to figure out whether the directors were acting within the bounds of their authority, but also whether they were putting the company first. And Bayer v. Baran provides a real-life example of how those principles play out in a messy, complicated situation.
And that point the court made about incidental benefits, that's a big deal, isn't it? The idea that just because a director's family member might get something out of a business decision, that doesn't automatically mean the directors are doing something wrong.
Absolutely. That's a crucial takeaway from this case. Bayer v. Baran makes it clear that not every instance where a director's spouse or child or sibling benefits from a corporate action is a breach of fiduciary duty. The key, as we've talked about, is figuring out the primary motive behind the decision. Was it all about helping the company, or was it really just about personal gain disguised as a business decision?
So as a future lawyer, maybe you're advising a board of directors someday. What are the practical lessons you should take away from this case? What should those directors keep in mind?
Well, the big takeaway is that board decisions have to be made in good faith. They need to be based on informed judgment, and the directors need to be able to show that their goal was truly to benefit the corporation. And whenever there's a decision that involves even the possibility of a conflict of interest, it's super important to document everything. Why did they make this decision? What were the business reasons behind it? Having that paper trail can be crucial if their actions are ever challenged.
So it's all about being transparent, showing that you've done your due diligence and proving that your heart's in the right place.
Exactly. And understanding this whole interplay between the business judgment rule and the duty of loyalty, well, that's going to be essential as you move forward in your legal career, whether you're focusing on corporate law or any other area where fiduciary duties are involved.
Right. Because these principles are everywhere. They apply to all sorts of situations, not just corporate boardrooms.
Absolutely. So as you're thinking about Bayer v. Baran, try to apply those principles to the world today. Think about things like, what if a CEO's family members are endorsing products on social media? What if there are complicated business deals happening between companies that are owned by the same family? What about those executive compensation packages that make headlines because they seem so outrageous?
Yeah, like when CEOs are making hundreds of times more than their employees.
Exactly. How would a court today, using the logic from Bayer v. Baran, decide whether those situations are okay or whether they might be a breach of the duty of loyalty? It's a question that's still relevant today.
It makes you think, doesn't it? Times have changed. The business world's more complex. But those fundamental principles from Bayer v. Baran are still at play.
They really are. And it's up to us as legal professionals to understand how to apply them to the challenges we're facing today.
Food for thought. Thanks for diving deep with us today. And for all you law students out there, keep those legal minds sharp. We'll catch you next time on The Deep Dive.